Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Collins Foods FY20 Results Announcement Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Drew O'Malley, Incoming Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Rachel. Good morning, everyone. This is Drew O'Malley, and with me on the call, I have Nigel Williams, our Chief Financial Officer. As previously noted and confirmed by the ASX release of the 9th of June, Graham Maxwell is now retired. I'm very pleased to be able to take you through the results for Collins Foods Limited for the full year, which was the 53-week period to the 3rd of May, 2020. To make things easier as we go through, we will reference underlying results excluding the impact of AASB 16, the new accounting standard on leasing, unless otherwise stated. Starting on slide one of our presentation, the full-year results for Collins Foods show strong revenue and earnings growth despite the impact of COVID on the last few months of trading. Revenue was up 8.9% to $981.7 million. The increase in revenue was driven by new store openings in KFC Australia, KFC Europe, and Taco Bell, in addition to positive same-store sales growth for KFC Australia. EBITDA was up 6.3% on an underlying basis to $120.6 million, reflecting good flow-through from the additional revenue. Underlying NPAT was $47.3 million, up 5.1% on prior year. During the year, there were a variety of non-trading items, principally in relation to impairments to some of our KFC Europe restaurants and the derecognition of certain deferred tax balances. These are outlined in more detail on page 25 of the presentation made available this morning and had an overall impact to NPAT of $5.1 million, leading to a statutory NPAT result of $42.2 million. Net operating cash flow was $96.4 million, down $1.1 million on prior year due to working capital timing offset by an increase in income tax paid. Net debt against prior year decreased $9.3 million to $203.2 million due to strong operating cash flows, and we will speak to the net leverage ratio on the next slide. Underlying basic earnings per share was $0.406, up 5.1% from the prior year-end. A fully franked final dividend of $0.105 per share has been declared, bringing the full-year fully franked dividend to $0.20 per share. Moving to slide two, we're also pleased to report that our balance sheet continues to strengthen despite the crisis. Significantly, the net leverage ratio further declined to 1.69 from 1.87 at prior year-end as a result of good cash management during the final few months of the financial year. Our covenant maximum for this metric is 2.75, and the bank facility is approximately $400 million using year-end exchange rates. Hence, we continue to operate well within our covenant and facility headroom. I now want to take a moment to bring you up to speed with the sales performance during the second half. As you all have seen from various updates we've provided over recent weeks, COVID did significantly impact our sales during the final few months of the second half of our financial year, although we have seen a recovery to varying degrees across all of our brands. You can see from slide three of our presentation that KFC Australia same-store sales were tracking at 3.5% for the first 20 weeks of the second half and dipped to -0.3% during the final 9 weeks. This brought the overall second half same-store sales number down to a positive 2.3%. As you can also see, in the 7 weeks since our financial year-end, same-store sales in KFC Australia have been a remarkable positive 11.6%. We believe this to be a direct reflection of the accessibility of QSR brands via takeaway channels during the crisis and the strength of KFC as a known and trusted brand to which customers gravitate during uncertain times. While this is an exceptional result, we would caution that we do expect these indexes to be short-term in nature, supported to a large degree by a lack of dining out alternatives and temporary government stimulus efforts. Indeed, we have seen some gradual decrease in these indexes over the course of those 7 weeks. Nonetheless, we do believe this period has attracted a layer of new and lapsed users back to the brand, and we are working hard to provide them with great experiences in order to retain as many of them as possible. In KFC Europe, same-store sales were exhibiting some positive momentum in the first 20 weeks of the second half before being significantly impacted by COVID and dropping to a negative 34.4% during the last 9 weeks of the financial year. However, in the 7 weeks since our financial year end, same-store sales in KFC Europe have improved to a negative 13.4% overall, consisting of Germany back to a negative 3.6% and Netherlands to negative 18.7%. The combination of more severe restrictions at the outset of the crisis, including some temporary closures, and a significant percentage of the business coming through takeaway channels contributed to the initial significant decline, though the steady recovery of indexes over the past few months in both markets has been encouraging. It's worth noting that freestanding drive-throughs in both markets are same-store sales positive. For Taco Bell, we're not yet reporting same-store sales numbers as the restaurants have not been open long enough. However, the sales trends have recovered close to pre-COVID levels, and I'll speak further to this a little bit later in the presentation. I'm now moving on to slide 4 of the presentation on FY20 highlights. In KFC Australia, as previously mentioned, we are pleased with the overall comp number for the year and the sales recovery over recent weeks. During the year, we built and opened 9 new restaurants. We currently have 137 restaurants with delivery through 2 aggregators, Deliveroo and Menulog, which is above our forecasted pace. The drive-through and delivery mix significantly increased during the COVID period, and we continue to invest strongly in digital and delivery channels to support our ability to leverage the acceleration of these longer-term shifts in consumer behavior. In Europe, same-store sales saw a decline of 5.8% for the full year. However, pre-COVID, same-store sales in Germany were positive 5.6%, and the Netherlands were just a negative 3.6%, which was a more promising result. During the year, we built and opened 3 new restaurants in Netherlands and 1 new restaurant in Germany, with 1 closure in Germany as well. We have increased the number of restaurants offering delivery, with 15 providing this service in Netherlands and 4 in Germany. We've also been pleased to see a shift towards drive-through in Germany, with sales more than doubling in that channel. And on Taco Bell, during the year, we built and opened 6 new restaurants in Queensland and 2 in Victoria, bringing our total to 12. During the COVID period, we were able to launch delivery earlier than planned through Menulog in 11 of our 12 restaurants. This has accelerated our ability to attract new customers through this channel and gives us a great platform to build on. Now, turning to KFC Australia in more depth. In terms of overall performance, KFC Australia delivered strong results during the year, with revenue and profits both up on the prior year. Total revenue was up 9.5% to $791.5 million, inclusive of the 3.5% same-store sales growth, as well as the addition of the 53rd trading week. KFC Australia underlying EBITDA grew by 10.6% to $132.7 million, with an overall EBITDA margin of 16.8%, up slightly from prior year due to sales leverage as well as strong cost control. We also built and opened 9 new restaurants during the year, bringing our restaurant count to 240. Moving to slide 7, KFC Australia continues to be a known and trusted brand, attributes which research has shown that customers tend to favor during uncertain times. The health and well-being of our customers' employees was our absolute top priority during the crisis, and our marketing communications did an excellent job emphasizing the safety, convenience, and value of KFC. Further, the flexibility of our operating model enabled us to pivot towards drive-through and delivery channels efficiently during dine-in restrictions, providing great tasting food and great value in a contactless way. COVID has accelerated the shift towards digital and delivery strategies. As mentioned, we currently have 137 restaurants supporting delivery, with 55 of these covered by multiple aggregators, specifically Deliveroo and Menulog, and we are now in a pilot phase with the newest aggregator, DoorDash. Our digital initiatives are also well on track, with app orders nearly doubling since last year and total e-commerce sales now at over 10% of overall sales. Our remodel and restaurant program continues to drive growth. A total of 9 new restaurants were built and opened during the year, and 41 remodels completed across the network, with a capital spend of approximately $20.5 million. During the year, we progressed the rollout of external digital menu boards for drive-thrus. This is an important step in maintaining the contemporary presence of our brand. We had 38 restaurants with external digital menu boards at year-end and have continued to ramp this up since then. We're on target to build a total of 9 to 12 new restaurants in FY21, despite some development time lag due to COVID. I'll now turn to our European business, slide 10 of the presentation if you have it in front of you. Overall, same-store sales for Europe, as mentioned, were negative 5.8% for the full year. Excluding the impact of COVID in the last 9 weeks, however, the same-store sales growth for Europe was slightly positive at plus 0.1%, with Germany having continued to post positive same-store sales growth for 12 consecutive months up to this point, and the Netherlands market improving thanks to stronger value messaging. Overall, underlying EBITDA was $6.8 million at a 5.1% margin, slightly down on prior year and after a very challenging trading period towards the end of the second half due to COVID. A net total of 3 new restaurants were opened during the year. The overall sales in Europe grew by 8.3% to $134.1 million for the year. On the next slide, we can see similar themes to the COVID responses we saw in Australia, though the impact of the crisis was obviously more severe in Europe. As in Australia, we prioritized the health and well-being of customers and employees with operational actions, and also pivoted toward takeaway channels like drive-thru and delivery as dine-in restrictions were imposed. The key differences with Australia, however, are the relative strength of the brand and the lower starting base of the takeaway channels in Europe, both reflective of an earlier stage of brand development there. All the same, despite the still negative same-store sales numbers, the pace of recovery has exceeded our expectations. As conditions improve, we expect to return to strong value and brand messaging in both countries, as well as expansion of digital and delivery efforts. As mentioned, we have 19 delivery restaurants across the two countries and continue to roll out digital initiatives such as kiosk and the upcoming click and collect. Turning to development in Europe, those 3 restaurants in Netherlands and 1 restaurant in Germany were all built during the first half of the year and are generally performing in line with expectations pre-COVID. During the financial year end, a new restaurant has opened in the Netherlands at Gorinchem, just east of Rotterdam towards the south of the country. It is expected that COVID will have some impact on the pace of our expansion, and in FY21 we are targeting between 3 to 4 new restaurants in the two countries combined. Nonetheless, we continue to develop the pipeline to be ready to accelerate as conditions warrant. Moving our attention to Taco Bell, FY20 was a year of continued expansion for the brand, including a successful market launch into Victoria last December. We continue to be encouraged by the reception of the brand amongst consumers and believe it has strong prospects for development in Australia. As a relatively new brand on the market, Taco Bell does not yet have the deep roots with consumers as does KFC, and hence was more susceptible to a sales drop during COVID, especially the 2 inline restaurants in Melbourne, though the return of sales to near pre-COVID levels has been encouraging. As a result of the crisis, we have shifted our customers toward drive-thru and accelerated the launch of delivery. That delivery launch has been very successful. The delivery partnership is with MenuLog, leveraging the KFC relationship, and we are investigating other aggregators for further expansion. To support delivery, we adapted the menu to include bigger family value meals. A couple of these value meals shown here include the Big Bell Box and the Crunch Time Deal, and these are proving a big hit with consumers. On slide 15, you'll see we opened 6 Taco Bell restaurants during the second half of the financial year, 4 in Queensland and 2 restaurants in Victoria at South Yarra and Hawthorne. This brings the total number of restaurants to 12. The expansion into Victoria saw the use of the Taco Bell tram for a unique launch, which was enthusiastically received by a receptive fan base there. The opening of further restaurants since March 2020 has been impacted by COVID, and as a result of this and the desire to fully embed the recent spate of new restaurant openings, we will be adjusting the pace of development during 2020. We continue to grow our pipeline of sites and expect to open 4 to 6 new restaurants during our FY21 financial year and are in discussions with Taco Bell around extensions to the development agreement. While there is much to do, we continue to remain very positive about the growth potential for Taco Bell in Australia. Sizzler Australia had same-store sales decline of -5.6% for the full year, with Sizzler revenues down 17.9% to $38.3 million for the year, driven by the closure of 3 stores and the significant impact of COVID. Due to restrictions for the final few months of the financial year, we were only allowed to trade on a takeaway and delivery basis, which we were able to launch over a couple of weeks. Sizzler had same-store sales growth of 5.3% for the first 44 weeks of the year prior to COVID. The restaurant count at the end of the year is 9. Overall EBITDA, including the Sizzler Asia business, was down $1.6 million to $3.4 million with a margin of 9%, down compared with prior year. We continue to monitor the easing of restrictions and the resulting performance of Sizzler restaurants closely. Moving on to Sizzler Asia, royalty revenues in Sizzler Asia were up 1.2% on the prior year despite COVID severely impacting royalties during the final few months of the financial year. At the end of the financial year, we had 73 restaurants in Sizzler Asia. However, due to COVID, since year-end, Sizzler China has closed all 6 remaining restaurants, and these are not expected to reopen. I will now hand over to Nigel to take you through the financials.
Thanks, Drew. I'm pleased to report on a year of strong operating cash flow, despite the impacts of COVID during the final few months of the year. Net operating cash flow before interest and tax was $127.4 million, compared to $125 million in the prior year, mainly due to an increase in EBITDA of $11.5 million, but also due to a small working capital benefit of $3.7 million, is expected to unwind during FY21. Statutory net operating cash flow before interest and tax, but after the application of the new leasing standard, was $180.2 million. A total of $52.9 million of cash outflows relating to leases have been reallocated to financing activities further down the cash flow, a key change brought about by the new accounting standard. Hence, we are continuing to show pre and post AASB 16 numbers. However, you will of course note that the bottom line cash flow is the same pre and post AASB 16. The net cash flow from investing activities was $57.3 million, comprising $54 million for CapEx, reflecting further investment in new restaurants and the existing network. The $54 million CapEx cash spend was made up of the following. New store and remodel CapEx was approximately $44 million, while maintenance and other capital was approximately $10 million. Net cash outflow from financing of $3.2 million was mostly the dividends paid during the year, $23.3 million, offset by bank borrowings of $21.2 million. Bottom line net cash flow was $35.9 million, but excluding the extra debt drawn during the year of $21.2 million, the underlying cash flow was $14.7 million positive, a very pleasing result. I'm now turning to slide 21, if you're still following the presentation, and it's a repeat of a slide referenced by Drew earlier, but we thought it was very important to repeat it, and it shows the net debt down to $203.2 million from $212.5 million last year, and the net leverage ratio also coming down to 1.69 from 1.87 at the prior year end. Our covenant for this metric is a maximum of 2.75, and just to repeat, the bank facility is approximately $400 million using the year-end exchange rates. So we're very comfortably operating within our covenant and facility headroom. On slide 24, there's a look at the balance sheet, where the cash balance is up 36.5 million to 116.3 million, again reflecting strong control over cash management. Property, plant and equipment is up 10.8 million, reflecting the continued investment in new and remodeled stores, partially offset by depreciation. Gross debt increased to 317.3 million from 291.3 million at the year end previously. Net assets are up 7.2 million compared to FY19. Now over to Drew for a word on the priorities for our FY21 financial year.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. On slide 23, you can see a distillation of our FY21 strategic priorities. In sum, you can expect a continuity of our current strategy to maintain the health of KFC Australia as we look to establish KFC Europe and Taco Bell as growth drivers for the business, even as we recover from COVID-19. For KFC Australia, this means continuing the push on digital and delivery and to increase our organic growth rate and pursue acquisitions where possible. For KFC Europe, we do expect this to be a more turbulent year, but we are focused on using value in both countries to support sales recovery with a strong operational and margin focus at store level. We expect a slight decrease here in openings, but may consider acquisitions if favorable. And for Taco Bell, we expect to continue to establish the brand and will be aggressive in marketing actions to drive trial and engagement, as well as to continue to refine the business model. As noted previously, we are looking at 4 to 6 builds over the next financial year. They'll expect to re-ramp up growth in the period thereafter in consultation with Taco Bell International. I would conclude by saying that I've been working closely with Graham Maxwell, our outgoing CEO, over the past 3 years, and we are in full alignment on the strategy and growth prospects of the business. I want to recognize the outstanding job Graham has done in leading the company over the past 7 years, and I look forward to leading the company to new levels of growth in the years to come. I would now like to open the call for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Tim Plume with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, how are you doing?
Hey Tim.
Good, thanks Tim.
Great to see the business improvement coming through there. Just a couple of questions from me, if that's all right. Firstly, around KFC Australia, Drew, some very strong like-for-like numbers there in the first 7 weeks. Are you able to provide any further insights, maybe in terms of the exit run rate that you're experiencing, how the stores with delivery were performing versus those without, or geographic performance, please?
Sure. Look, it's obviously been gratifying to see same-store sales so strong at the beginning of the year. So there's a few things going on there. I shared earlier, some of it is just around QSR in general, right? As quick service goes, overall food and drink we know in Australia is down 31% since January, and we're up. So some of that is just being convenient and accessible through QSR, and some, as I mentioned, is strength of KFC. What we do think is fueling a couple other factors that are fueling it. One is, you know, JobKeeper for sure. Government stimulus absolutely tends to support just consumer spending. And as I mentioned, there's just not been a lot of dining out options available. And it's reasonable to believe, as we've seen in other markets, that as more of those dining concepts become available, we should see a softening. So if I look at the period that we reported on, so we've seen the numbers come down a little bit. So the 11.5 would be close to a 13 for the first half of that period and closer to a 10 at the end of that period. So it is a gradual softening, and we'll see how that tracks going forward. But overall, to your point on geography, I think what's been encouraging is that we've really seen this across geographies. So, you know, we've seen a similar lift across WA. We've seen a similar lift across Queensland on trend, and WA, I think, has outperformed nearly all of our markets, which is very encouraging. From a delivery perspective, since I think you asked about 4 questions for the price of one, we are seeing delivery sales doing very well during this period, as you might imagine. And if you recall from the presentation, what we call e-commerce sales, which would be the combination of app and delivery sales, is now in double digits. So we've seen, just enormous growth in the delivery channel. And we expect that to continue over time. So look, overall, again, we need to be really cautious about extrapolating out these results because we do expect them to be short-term in nature, but certainly a gratifying start to the year.
Great. And then just a second question around cost inflation in the current environment. How should we be thinking around labor, rent, and probably more importantly, chicken pricing over the next 12 months?
Yeah, sure. So maybe starting with just going through that in a little depth, and we start with chicken. So if you recall, six months ago, we mentioned some headwinds on costs, and that had been the case. But those are fully baked into these numbers by now. So on chicken prices, we're locked in until 2022. So we think we're in pretty good shape there. And we don't anticipate much inflationary pressure on COGS. So look, we've seen wheat prices come down from about $480 to $300. And, as growing conditions have improved, we think that's taken some pressure off. On the labor side, look, I think it's less around wage pressure, maybe a bit on the manager side, but team member, I think they've moved. You've probably seen the minimum wage increase until next February to 1.75%. We do believe, though, there is going to be a bit more labor required to go into satisfying COVID requirements around hygiene, social distancing, especially as we open dining rooms. So we want to be a little bit cautious there. We also want to support really good, exceptional customer experiences to try to retain some of those new and lapsed customers that I mentioned. So I think there's probably a bit of labor pressure that we'd anticipate going forward. The other piece that probably goes into the equation, Tim, is because we expect, like we're effectively in a recession, we expect to be very, very cautious on passing through pricing to customers over the next period of time. So, that's generally something we would take a little bit. We'd expect that would probably be delayed. So, look, overall, it's a difficult period to predict. You've probably heard us say before that we consider margins and KFC side optimized. And as you know, we aim for strong, consistent, stable margins. So with these numbers, we're certainly, pretty confident where we are in margins. But overall, we don't want to extrapolate or lead too much.
Great. And then just lastly, around Taco Bell and the decision to potentially slow the store rollout. I mean, you mentioned that the portfolio was almost back to pre-COVID sales, and pre-COVID sales were pretty impressive. Have the latest store rollouts performed vastly different to your expectations? I guess I'm just trying to understand the key driver behind that decision to slow down the rollout. Is that preservation of capital, that it's currently performing different to expectations, and should we be thinking about that 50 target potentially being lower or just pushed out, 12-month breather and then back to the previous run rate?
Yeah, sure. So let me talk about Taco Bell in a little bit more depth. So as I mentioned, we were encouraged that we saw, sales kind of rebound in Taco Bell. I think on our last release, we said back to pre-COVID levels. Having said that, that was also supported by the launch of delivery in Taco Bell, and some of that we had done some free delivery for Taco Bell in the first week. So some of that has come back down a little bit. So we're probably trading, as we said, a little bit below pre-COVID levels. Look, I'd put it this way on Taco Bell. We love Taco Bell and really believe in the long-term future in Australia. But to build 20 restaurants of a new brand on a base of 12 during a highly volatile environment like a pandemic just doesn't seem like a prudent course of action. So we are going to take it a little bit slower for the moment, and that's why I think we're going to go with the 4 to 6 over our financial year. And look, we've had a lot of good conversations at Taco Bell, and as you might imagine, franchisors really across the world are needing to demonstrate flexibility, I think, with franchisees around development targets, et cetera. So that's kind of where we are. We just want to give ourselves a little bit of time to learn from the last 6 that we opened, which are still quite new, and to just further our understanding of how the brand performs. So, yeah, look, it's going to be a bit of a temporary slowdown, and we would expect to ramp it back up probably in the second half of next year.
Understood. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Ferrier with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Drew and Nigel. Thanks for your time.
Morning, James.
Hi, James.
Following on from Tim's question there about Taco Bell, are restaurant brands taking the same approach, or are they sort of going to stick with a more accelerated rollout in their markets?
I think you'd have to ask restaurant brands that. Look, we work closely with them, on the brand. They have, the two stores down in Sydney right now. But I think in terms of their development aspirations, I think you probably need to check with them on that. Can't really comment.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I know you've talked about this in the past, just given Taco Bell's still wrapped up in shared services. What was the underlying EBITDA loss for FY20?
We had given some guidance before around effectively a negative $2 million, which was thereabouts accurate for Taco Bell. But look, that reflects, effectively profitability at store level and then some G&A costs that we've had to go into to get the brand started. I think with Taco Bell, from a store performance standpoint, overall we've got some profitability at store level. But it varies greatly by store type. So what we're looking to do is really take a bit of time to understand that in more depth, success factors, what's going on, and how we can drive top line, I think, with the right marketing action. So I think at this stage we're just looking for a little bit of time to digest it. And I think given the environment and COVID, it's probably just the prudent thing to do.
Yeah, okay. So is it fair to say the inline stores are the ones that are not performing as strong as the drive-throughs, the freestanding?
Yeah, that's exactly right, James. I mean, especially during COVID, as you can imagine, that anybody who's very, dine-in based has had much more impact, and that's certainly true of our stores down in Melbourne.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Yep. In the significant items, there was one line there, I'm just checking now, marketing expenditure redirected to digital technology, $2 million. Can you just explain what that is?
Yeah, so as you know, James, we're putting in external digital menu boards across the estate, and so the franchisor is allowing the use of some of the marketing fund that we would typically contribute to be redirected towards that. And because that's a capital item, we do see some benefit in our P&L, and that's why we've called it out to say, actually, that's a one-off. That one-off will continue for a little while because we've got quite a period of time for us to put those external digital menu boards in, but that one-off will disappear in a year or so's time, and it's not the benefit of management action. That's why we're saying it's a one-off and called it out from the underlying result.
Yeah, okay, understood. That's helpful. And finally, on KFC Europe, second half margins actually increased quite a bit year on year despite same-store sales going negative. Drew, you talked earlier to Tim's question around the performance in the sales line, but just what's happening on the cost line such that you've got such a stronger performance on margins in the second half?
Yeah, look, I think we've put in a lot of work right now on Europe on margins. A lot of it is operational improvements. I think the team has really gotten some efficiencies out of the business. We've got a new ops guy up there in Europe has been doing a terrific job for us on, just improving the fundamentals. And this business is always about operating efficiency, and I think we're starting to see some of that trickle through in our European business. So, look, I don't think we're by any means out of the woods there. I think it's a bit of a a tale of two markets, right? Germany, when we had started to see same-store sales growth, even though a lot of it was strongly on the value side, just that extra leverage really helps you from a margin perspective, and certainly a bit less so on the Netherlands side.
Thanks. That's helpful. But just to clarify, the efficiencies, are they coming through sort of more in the store level margins, or are you talking about having some sort of savings at the head office level, the sort of segment overhead level below the stores?
No, that's primarily store level. I mean, our overheads in Europe tend to be pretty stable.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Thanks very much. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, James.
No worries.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Elijah Mir with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Congratulations on the result, and well done, Drew, on your first day in the job.
Thanks.
First question, I just wanted to see if we could get a bit more colour on the same-store sales growth, particularly over the last 7 weeks, if you could maybe give some indication of how much is sort of driven by number of transactions versus size of transactions.
Yeah, sure. I assume you're talking about KFC Australia here.
Yeah, correct.
So, yeah, that's right. So, look, it's a great question. So what's interesting is that, and something about the way you mentioned asked the question, I think you know where this is going, but what we've typically seen is actually transactions are down if you look at the net impact. Average ticket is way up. So let me explain that a little bit. So for KFC Australia, what we've actually seen is the transactions that have decreased would be ones that are really born out of some of those impromptu, spontaneous transactions. So it would be things like snacking occasions. So think of students coming after school to KFC, or late night trade transactions. You know, people have just not been out and about, you know, that time of day. Food courts would be another one, right? As food courts have been, you know, still down around 20-30%. In sales. So some of those lower ticket items, the transactions down there, we've seen a decrease on. But ticket has been up. And some of that is obviously just a weighted average of, you know, the transactions that remain tend to be higher ticket. But we've also seen people gravitate towards higher group transactions. So delivery, right, with a higher ticket would be one of those items. More people ordering larger group meals through the drive-through on lunch and dinner. So all of those things together are kind of giving us this aggregated impact of slightly down on transactions, way up in ticket, and a net impact of being up double digits in same-store sales. So I think as we look from a marketing lens about how we think this will track, look, we anticipate over time that's going to gradually work itself out. So as dine-in restrictions are eased, as people get out and about, which is already happening, we would expect organically some of those transaction numbers to come back in and probably ticket to come down a little bit.
Yep, that's clear. And then I guess following on from that, can you give, I guess, any indication on in KFC Australia, the quantum of difference between sort of the average digital order versus the average sort of in-store drive-through order? Is there so much different in that ticket value?
Yeah, look, it would be delivery is going to be a bit higher, so you're kind of in the, you know, high 20s, and then your drive-through order is going to be, you know, let's say high teens, low 20s. So, you know, anytime you're putting a delivery fee on something, right, people are almost inclined to order more because they want to, you know, make sure that they're getting the bang for the buck since they're paying a $8.95 delivery fee. So, as you would expect, the average ticket on a delivery order is higher.
Yeah, definitely. And just finally on digital, the number of stores sort of doing the delivery options was up to 137, up from 100 in the first half. Is that pretty much the level that it's going to get to across your network, or do you guys see it increasing over the next 6 months?
No, we think it can go up. We think it can go up further. So, you know, we're at 137. I think we had hoped to, you know, finish the year a bit below that, but, you know, we're certainly pleased with the pace of it. What is interesting is as you expand the delivery network, you're getting out into more rural and suburban areas with lower density. So what that typically means is when you launch a new store with delivery, it'll come in at a lower percentage of sales, if that makes sense. So what's gratifying, I think what's encouraging, is that the first group of stores that we've launched now close to 2 years ago, you know, we're seeing really solid double-digit percent of sales coming out of delivery, which is great news. But as you expand the network, and we think we could probably get to about three-quarters of the portfolio ultimately with delivery, it's important to note that the initial volumes that come in are at a lower level.
No problem. That's it for me. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Barker with Morgans. Please go ahead.
Hi, Drew and Nigel. I just had a few, if that's okay, please. I just wanted to confirm if you received any government support in either European region, and if so, what the quantum of it was?
Yeah, so there's nothing in the these results from Australia. There is a bit in Europe from Germany and the Netherlands governments, but it's not a material amount, James. It's probably in and around maybe a million bucks, something around in and around that number.
Okay, great. And just maybe your conversations with Yum, just obviously understand you've got development agreements across the place, and particularly in Europe at the moment, I think that's been extended for a number of years. Could you just maybe talk about the outlook for those development agreements? Obviously, you've mentioned Taco Bell, but just in Europe as well, please.
Yeah, so Taco Bell, let's start with that. You know, we do have a development agreement with Taco Bell. I think what's important to note is two things. One, what I mentioned with just, I think the franchisor giving flexibility under the current circumstances, and I think that's one that has, you know, just plays into the way we think about development over the next few years. The other thing is, let's not forget with Taco Bell, there's only incentives linked to the Taco Bell development agreement, so we don't have any, there's no penalties for falling short on the development agreement. It's just the loss of right of first refusal. So I think with Taco Bell, we, you know, feel pretty comfortable that you know, the adjusted pace is the right thing. And again, you know, we've been very transparent. I think we've had a good relationship with Taco Bell and talking that through. On Europe, look, we've got a few years to go on the development agreement in Europe. You know, that is one where there are some penalties for falling short. Having said that, you know, again, in Europe, I think Yum has indicated flexibility there, I think, around the current circumstances, especially in Europe, where, as you can imagine, you know, the impact of COVID has been greater. So there is new leadership coming into Europe, and I think we've, you know, have a good relationship there. But, you know, that'll probably play into the way we think about extending the development agreement in the next few years, so more to come on that.
Okay, thanks. And maybe just a follow on from that, you've mentioned obviously acquisitions for both Australia and Europe. Obviously, Europe seems like an opportunity to get small scale over there. Does the development agreement sort of encompass if you were to make acquisitions? And maybe could you just talk about the current landscape there?
Yeah, look, it's obviously quite fluid. You know, I think when you think of KFC Australia, it's obviously a much more stable landscape. I think in Europe, where the impact has been greater, you know, other franchisees have certainly been impacted more. So I think you're right in saying overall we'd love to get more scale in Europe. There's really nothing we can, you know, report on right now from an acquisition standpoint in Europe. But, you know, obviously given the circumstances, you know, if conditions were favorable, it would certainly be something that we would consider.
Okay, that's all for me. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Shane Bennon with Bly Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon, guys. A couple of the questions I've had have been touched on the way through here, so, but if I could just embellish it a little bit. Look at the journey in Europe. It's been running best out of 4 years now, and it's been a bit of a stop-start experience, and it's fully recognise that we're talking about brand building here, and also we've been experimenting with formats and whatnot. But if I could just take a deeper dive, if you wouldn't mind, as to what you're seeing in Europe and the potential there, because it does feel as though we're still feeling our way, and I'd just like to see the evolution of that.
Yeah, listen, I can appreciate that question. Look, I'll say this. For me as incoming CEO, it's a part of the business that I'm looking forward to getting closer to despite the distance and restrictions in travel. I spent 20 years in Europe running KFCs, and as I look at our business there, I think the first question I would ask is, look, this brand is incredibly strong globally. Is there anything intrinsically different around Germany and Netherlands which would lead us to believe the brand can't work there? And I can't see anything, certainly on my current view that would dissuade me from thinking that we have a good potential growth leg here. So understand it's been a few years. I think obviously COVID has played a lot into how things have gone in the short term. But I'd also, reinforce that I think prior to COVID, we were starting to see some decent traction, and certainly in Germany. And, Netherlands has historically been a good business. So I haven't seen anything that would dissuade me from believing there's a good growth narrative here. And it's part of the business I'm looking forward to getting closer to.
Thanks, Drew. And just, just expanding on one of the other earlier questions relating to acquisition, again, highlighted that you'd like to sort of see or be more active in the acquisition front, I guess, here as much as Europe from the sound of things. But the opportunities here, I mean, you mentioned that the other franchisees are probably a little bit, probably knocked around a little bit more so than what you might have been, and therefore might be financially struggling. But just the attitude of Yum when it comes to your furtherance of the footprint here in Australia?
Yeah, look, we're the largest franchisee here in Australia, and we're a third of the market. There's a new incoming CEO for Yum, Richard Wallace, who I think certainly has growth very much top of mind. And, I think we've got a good relationship and a good partnership that, we want to work together to unlock channels for growth. So Yum's been very supportive. As you might imagine, they don't really take any sort of intrusive approach to things like acquisitions. That's obviously, they want to keep all their franchisees happy. Typically, as you've seen, we've not really had any acquisition opportunities in Australia over the past couple of years because the brand has been so strong and, obviously not a lot of franchisees are eager to sell. So, if anything changes on that front, I think we're certainly open to the opportunity, but, it's not one where, people are lining up at our front door to sell. So that's kind of where I think we are and where Yum is on the acquisition side.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Tim Plumbe with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, Tim.
Good.
Two other follow-ups, if that's right, and apologies if I missed it. Nigel, are you able to talk a little bit in terms of total CapEx expectations for FY21, please?
Yeah. Look, I would say it's probably between 50 and 55 million. Tim, depending on how many new stores we can get away.
Great. And then, Drew, just a follow-on from Shane's questioning. Just if we have a look at Netherlands, I mean, when that business was acquired, the like-for-like growth was quite strong. That since changed. I mean, looking back, what do you think happened with the business? Was that the pricing lever had been pulled too hard, or what needs to change to get back the growth? I mean, I get it for the Germany business because you didn't have a value offering and that got implemented. What are going to be the key drivers that will get those like-for-likes back to positive? Obviously, pushing COVID-19 aside, but been in a business-as-usual environment.
Yeah, I think you've touched on it, Tim. I mean, when the brand does well, the two pieces that come across strong is the overall brand story as well as value. And, certainly what appears to have been the case in Netherlands over the past couple of years is it's gotten away from that story. And when you really look at the success of the brand around the world, there's not that many markets it doesn't work in. So, you know, what we've really been, I think, pretty vocal with Yum, and to their credit, you know, they've gotten a new marketing head who I think has been pretty single-mindedly focused on brand and value. I think the game plan is to return to that messaging. So that's certainly a big piece of it is, you know, when you can get the brand part right, then that's going to help. The other piece of it I think that's necessary in Netherlands is just scale. You know, I talked about the difference between Netherlands and Australia from the strength of the brand and the difference it makes in an environment like this. You know, we're still, it's still a relatively small brand in Netherlands, and I think our ability to profitably grow and build out that market, I think, is one that should also help to improve the narrative there. So that's kind of my lens, I think, on the way I'd be seeing Netherlands right now.
And so if you think about that value story, I mean, if you're comparing it relative to Australia, where do you think Germany and Netherlands sit in terms of that journey, in terms of, you know, percentage complete?
I don't know if I can put a percentage on it, but I think it's earlier in the journey, right? You're talking about KFC Australia has been around for 50 years, and I think has an incredible heritage and incredible brand strength, and I think has a very strong marketing budget to be able to manage multiple messaging on different layers at one time. You're not going to have that in Netherlands, so you're talking about a brand maturity that's just earlier in the, you know, earlier in its lifespan. And as we said, probably a few missteps in terms of getting the consistency of messaging around value that we probably need. So that's how I'd probably frame it. I'm not sure I could give you a percentage, but it is our belief that we've got to do a better job on the consistency of messaging there.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.